The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Thursday, the 11th of March, 2021. On the podcast today, Bill Brody Good, CEO and Technical Director of Alien Metals. And Bill talks about their exclusive agreement to acquire the Silver Tailings Project at Elizabeth Hill. Also on the podcast, Craig Martin, chairman of Dynamic Capital, investment manager for Vietnam Holding, and summarises their February monthly investor report. Plus, John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel, talks about Blue Rock Diamonds, Codon Minerals, Orosur Mining, and Blue Jay Mining. And as always, at the end of the podcast, I have two lists for you, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most read RNSs too. And of course, you can check out both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk, where you'll see lots of other content, including an article on Tech Capital, one on Altona Rare Earths, one on 88 Energy, one on Gfinity. Good deal there today. And of course, I always like to check out our COVID-19 index. It is showing biggest riser, React Group, up close to 12%, 2.1. Biggest faller, which is ridiculous, is Gfinity. There's a seller in there, pounding away, hitting that sell button, working on the liquidity of this deal, which is the biggest commercial deal they've done. And yet, it'll wash out. It's temporary. Very frustrating for holders. But, a really good bit of news being sunk by that seller, which is quite annoying. Anyway, check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Bill Brody Good, CEO and Technical Director of Alien Metals. UFO is the ticker there. Bill, thanks for joining me.
Justin, nice to chat.
Yeah, and you've announced yesterday you've entered into an exclusive agreement at the Elizabeth Hill project, and we'll discuss a bit more of that. Before we do, as always, there's a couple of moving parts here to the company, so explain, if you could summarise what you're all about at Alien Metals, please, Bill.
Well, look, we're the same company we were a few months ago, and when we last spoke, exploration, mineral exploration development company. Our core projects are silver projects in Mexico, also a copper gold project in Mexico that is now being funded and managed by Capstone Mining Corporation of Canada. They're going great guns there, and they've actually just started the maiden drilling program on that, which is very exciting. And in Australia, we have the Elizabeth Hill mine that we're speaking of a little bit today, and the recently acquired ground, sort of exploration ground around it, which is looking, on a daily basis more interesting and exciting. And then we have the 51% of the two iron ore projects in the Pilbara, which actually we're just in the last few days of completing a maiden drilling program on one of those as well. So, and as usual, we're looking at other opportunities, being shown other things, looking at things that seem the potential fit, the strategy and the likes of the company.
Yeah, marvelous stuff. Well, let's talk about this agreement here. Tell us more about this new opportunity tailings project at Elizabeth Hill, then, Bill.
We've had the project a little while. We've been doing a lot of research and study, and of course, suddenly we realised that there's sort of 16,000 tons plus of tailings from the original mine. That looking at old reports, they were running at over 1,000 grams a ton silver in the tailings, which is obviously quite exceptional. So we took an opportunity last time we had a crew up there to take a few samples. And as we reported recently, averaging of over 450 grams a ton still is quite exceptional. And we thought, well, hang on, we need to look at this opportunity because it might be a small source of income should it be processable especially with those sorts of grades. So so we spoke to the current owners, I suppose you'd call, the Wombat Company and Wombat Resources, excuse me, and who sort of have leased these tailings for many years without really doing anything. And we've got ourselves exclusivity for 60 days to push ahead now to sort of justify doing some more metallurgy. Spoke to a great metallurgist in Perth just yesterday. We've already got some sort of things in the pipeline to work up the data, the material to take it to the next level of knowledge, hopefully find that it's it becomes a economic little project for the company.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And how would that sort of, how would this process of extracting silver from the tailings work if you went ahead, with development and production then, Bill?
Well, look, I'm not a miner or a heap leacher. Ideally, there's probably two options on the table at the moment. That would be a combination of maybe gravity, pure gravity extraction of sort of native silver or silver sulfides. From sort of shaker table type sluicing systems, and the other option potentially is like leaching. So you actually sort of run a solution through the material, and the silver is attracted to the solution, and you extract the silver at the other end. But this is, it's probably too early days to say exactly how the best way would be, because obviously the factors are, chemical composition, metallurgy of the silver in the tailings that will dictate in a way the best way to extract. The extraction percentage, could we extract 50%, 80% with using different methods? And also the cost. Obviously, at the end of the day, it's sort of relative to the cost. If it costs us $10 an ounce to extract, and silver, as it's running today, is what, $26-27 an ounce. Well, that makes sense. That's a good profit. If it costs $25 an ounce, then at the current price, it's uneconomic. So. These are all factors we're now looking at, sort of ticking along while we waiting for the final interpretation work from Southern Geoscience, from the sort of air mag work that was done recently, and for getting boots on the ground and starting to really test some of these targets, including obviously the mine.
Yeah, absolutely. Marvellous stuff. And a timeline for the progression of this tailings project then?
Well, at the moment we have a 60-day period to push ahead. And as I said, we're getting on with it. So we would like to think that within that period we're well advanced, one way or the other, let's be honest, but hopefully in a positive fashion. And then... we just keep, it'll depend on obviously finalising, if things go well, a deal with Wombat Resources, and then, sort of pressing the green light. So it's a hard one to say, but I'd like to think if everything goes well, we're sort of getting towards the end of Q1. Things go well, Q3, Q4 this year, which would hopefully tie in really well with, producing extra funds to put into the exploration on the project itself.
Mm-hmm. Marvellous stuff. Okay, Bill, listen, if someone is listening right now, likes the sound of the progress you're making here, and, they're still not following the story, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Sure. I think the first reason would be the core commodities of Alien, which are silver, which is a very strong commodity now and going forward, with the whole EV, PPE aspects of its value. Also, obviously, the iron ore. I mean, iron ore is running at over $170 a ton. I mean, it's just phenomenal rise and steady increase in demand. We have those excellent projects in the iron ore space. And copper as well, you know, with Capstone now drilling on Donovan 2 in Mexico, that's advancing really well. So we've got excellent commodities that we feel are very strong and going to maintain their value and hopefully even increase. Jurisdictions we're in, both sort of first tier mining jurisdictions, Mexico and Australia. We have great teams in both jurisdictions, so we're able to function. We are functioning. And thirdly, I'd like to think the team, the management, the core management of Alien are, you know, got the right experience and the right background and going forward, the sort of ability to drive these investments and you know, add value to all the projects and therefore to any investor who gets involved.
Marvellous stuff. Bill, good to chat to you. Like I said, lots going on, so hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
I look forward to it. You take care. Thanks.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Craig Martin, Chairman of Dynam Capital, which is the investment manager of Vietnam Holding. VNH is the ticker there. Craig, thanks for joining me.
Oh, a real pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, and you've just released your monthly investor report. We'll dig into that and ask a few questions about that. Before we do, Craig, Vietnam Holding, can you explain what it's about, please?
Yes, Vietnam Holding is a main board listed investment company, about $150 million of asset value. And those assets are all Vietnamese equities. So it's a portfolio where the underlying are all stocks that we've selected from our team on the ground in Vietnam, and it's you can buy the stock on the main board of the London Stock Exchange.
Excellent stuff. And it's worth noting today, you know, it's 1 year anniversary when the World Health Organization announced COVID as a global pandemic. I always remember that. And so it's worth explaining how is, you know, Vietnam's COVID situation 1 year on. Craig, tell us about that if you could.
Gosh, well, time flies, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I'd say the good news is that the vaccination rollout in Vietnam has started. Vietnam, remember, did a great job over the last 12 months of controlling the virus. So there's not as much urgency, perhaps, to get jabs in the arms as perhaps in the UK, which has done a fantastic job, by the way. The infection numbers, excuse me, and deaths are low in Vietnam. We're talking, you know, less than 2,600 infections and less than 40 deaths. Now, that's over the last 12 months, so those numbers are fantastic. And more than a year ago, Vietnam authorities released their first viral, if you'll forgive the pun, TikTok and YouTube videos telling the population to wash their hands and wear masks, and those habits linger. So Vietnam's done a great job controlling COVID, and now it starts to roll out the vaccine, so it'll be part of the, you know, the vaccinated masses, and over time things will get back to something that we recognize as normal.
Yeah. I mean, recently the markets have been a bit volatile over here. You know, the US and UK, there's been investors jumping from tech to growth and to banks and value and all that stuff. There's been a lot of rotation trade going on. Is that happening in Asia and Vietnam?
Look at that rotation trade we're reading about. We see that obviously in the US. It's certainly happening in perhaps China as well, where there's a big tech market and people are perhaps looking to rotate into that. Vietnam's not so much a tech market, although there are one or two homegrown potential unicorns, you know, companies that are really growing fast. But on the whole, it's much more of perhaps a basic economy. So although there is high growth, it's from the underlying economy rather than perhaps disruption technologies that we see in the West or more recently in China. That said, on the banks, we've actually been tilting towards bank stocks for more than a year. Mm. And that's starting to pay off as a strategy for Vietnam Holding, as the banks have done really well and they're positioned for more. In some ways, of course, a bank is a leveraged play on an economy. And the Vietnamese economy is doing really well. So the banks are doing well. And we like banks also because they capture a broader part of the economic story. perhaps other than some of the other pure listed companies in whichever segment. So in our balanced portfolio, you know, banks are an interesting and a key part of that story. So we're not necessarily doing anything in terms of rotating, just finding good growth companies across several sectors in Vietnam.
Yeah, yeah. Take us through the relationship with the dollar here, because the dollar, of course, everyone's reliant on and or in some way affected by the strength of the dollar. And the trend, of course, more stimulus happening. The trend this year is possibly for a weaker dollar. How does that impact, you know, emerging markets, Vietnam in particular then, Craig?
It's a great question. I think broadly, when the dollar's weaker, the emerging market currencies rally. And that would mean that the, you know, the Vietnamese currency, the Vietnamese dong, could appreciate this year. It's been relatively stable, actually, for the last 2-3 years, although over the last 25 years, there's been a trend of depreciation of about 2 to perhaps 3% per year, which is somewhat normal for emerging markets. But we think that a dollar weakness, perhaps as the longer term trend for this year, should do well for emerging markets, and certainly for the Vietnamese dong, it should do well as well.
Excellent stuff. Some frontier markets in your part of the world look a bit risky right now. I'm thinking in particular Myanmar. There's lots of headlines coming out of there. How does this affect, or does it affect, you know, Vietnam in any way?
Well, it's interesting. So obviously, both Myanmar and Vietnam are members of ASEAN, the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, and that's probably where the similarities end. So Myanmar is in a right mess. It's such a pity. It's actually a wonderful country and a great people. The challenge for Myanmar is there's more than 150 ethnic groups who fight a lot, and you've got a massive army who does that fighting, and a recent democratic government who in some ways failed to actually move the needle on all the directions because they were hampered by that army who controls 25% of the seats in parliament. Vietnam, on the other hand, is a very strong, stable government. Just last month, we saw the new five-year term for that government initiated. And this around growth and making Vietnam a more modern industrialized economy, a middle-income country, and a key part of the global supply chain. It's not a democracy, but it works. And it's delivered average growth of 6 to 7% over the last 30 years. So Southeast Asia is a like a patchwork quilt of countries at different paces and modalities. Some frontier markets, such as Myanmar, are having a very difficult time, but others, like Vietnam, which is on that cusp of frontier versus emerging, is doing really well. So actually, you know, Vietnam may even do better as a result of weakness in other parts of ASEAN.
Yeah, yeah. So your latest monthly investor update here, it seems that Vietnam's equity markets had a good February. Is it all sort of plain sailing now in Vietnam for the rest of the year?
No, I wish it was all plain sailing. Never seems to be. In reality, it takes a lot of on-the-ground work, and that's why we've got a team on the ground in Vietnam. There are probably over 1,600 public companies to choose from, and so we're trying to find 20 to 30 really good ones, ones that perhaps get what ESG, environmental social governance, means. So that's a, you know, it's a challenge. To really hunt and find those good companies. The liquidity in the market in Vietnam, in the stock market, has been on fire recently. It's almost three times what it was this time last year or 18 months ago. And although that's a good thing, it's actually causing some problems. It's causing the stock exchange infrastructure to creak a little bit. So that's got to be fixed. And the balance is to fix that without killing off, you know, the recent interest from a lot of new investors. There's a lot of domestic investors. The Vietnamese are very happy and cheerful and want to invest. And we've seen several hundred thousand new investors join the fray in the last 12 months. So the government, the regulator and the authorities, the Ministry of Finance, are really working to kind of make sure the system scales up with the increased liquidity. But it's never entirely plain sailing. And so I think you've got to be active and you've got to be on the ground and keep a close eye on what's happening.
Mm-hmm. Marvelous stuff. Okay. So three reasons then, Craig, if someone's watching right now, why they should add Vietnam Holding to their watch list, please.
Well, Vietnam Holding portfolio gives you growth at a reasonable valuation. You know, solid businesses, bricks, not clicks, yet 20% earnings per share growth, 10 times PE. So that's the first reason, it's growth at reasonable valuation. Secondly, it's an actively managed portfolio. We've got a team on the ground, big focus on responsible and sustainable investing. So you can give your money to the fund and sleep at night knowing it's well managed. And thirdly, there's a discount to the net asset value. The stock's traded on the London Stock Exchange, and that discount to net asset value is attractive. It's a bit like, you know, buying a pound worth of value for 80p. So what's not to like?
Excellent stuff. Craig, good to chat to you. Hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Look forward to it. Thanks so much for your time. Cheers.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel. You all right, John?
Yes, good.
And what's happening in the world there? Macro, let's get, we'll get into a couple of stocks in a bit, but anything sticking out to you macro-wise?
Well, the Americans about to start receiving their stimulus checks.
That's yes.
That's $1,400 each.
I saw
I
that.
I can't imagine the UK giving us that sort of stimulus check.
Do you know what, John? I tweeted this morning, right? I tweeted this morning. I got some people saying, "Yes, but what about inflation?" I said, "Go big or go home." $1.9 trillion dollar stimulus bill. This is $1,400 for most Americans. It's probably more than the 1% pay rise offered to NHS staff over here. If you really want to get the economy on its feet again, take note, Rishi and Boris. I got a couple of people whinging about it, but I, do you know what? I think that's why, you know, business in America is always better and more entrepreneurial, more innovative than over here, because they got balls. You know, they go for it. And over here, we're a bit conservative. Oh, hang on, it's a big bill coming up at the end. Just go for it. What they understand, if you don't stimulate the economy, the government won't get any tax return, tax receipts. They invest in the economy. They have to really, you know, pedal to the metal, you know, really go for it. You have one life.
Well, the Americans are going for it, and I must admit, I was shocked, as were many others, at the 1% pay increases for NHS staff, and particularly the nurses, who frankly should have their pay doubled. We really need to be training more of our own people. And you know, making the money go round in our own economy. And you know, this has been a failing within the UK for many years. But the fact, look, the fact is that the West is recovering from the coronavirus. Economic numbers are looking pretty good. We are going to see some high inflation numbers on a year-on-year basis, and probably on a month-on-month basis as well. But they are going to reflect more the deflation of last year that we saw as we plunged into the coronavirus lockdowns, and I think that'll be a sort of temporary phenomenon. Although we are looking for higher than normal inflation rates going forwards, because it's difficult for policymakers to tread a fine line. I think, as you say, go big is the way to go, and that's the, you know, it's much better to be sure of creating a strong economic recovery and risk perhaps slipping back into something more anemic.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, do you know what? Talking about you know, big plans, you'll probably like this. I'm watching a documentary on the BBC. It's a three-parter. It's called China, A New World Order. And it's quite worrying, actually, how silently they, while the world has been focused on like North Korea or Middle East, all that, solidly the Chinese have been growing this massive economy and doing things they shouldn't be doing, trying to make inroads into other economies with their belt and road strategy. And it's very worrying, even down to, you know, these correctional camps where people have been taken away, not seen, kids taken off parents. It is worrying. It's worth watching. And it's almost at a stage now where these smaller companies have been given loans, for Sri Lanka's example, given loans by China, and they have to really take them because to help them out. And then they're sort of in a debt sort of trap, and China ends up owning their ports and their airports and all that stuff. And it's quite worrying because you think they are big now. If someone doesn't make a stand now, then it'll be very ugly down the road when they are super powerful and they are bigger than anyone else in the world by far, and we haven't got the leverage to stop them. It will take the rest of the world against China to stop them doing what they want to do. I just think it's a bit worrying, really. It's this thin end of the wedge, you know?
Well, we were writing about this in our morning notes this morning, that China is looking to reset the relationship with the US. And of course, Joe Biden has been talking to Chinese leaders for 10, 20 years because of he's been involved with the White House for a long, long time. But of course, there are significant topics that still need to be addressed. technology theft, copyright, hacking attacks, tariffs imposed by the Chinese, as well as trade restrictions that they have against every other country in the world, pretty much. Then let's not forget the pollution and the climate change issues, plus highways, 5G, and the potential for spying. And, you know, all that's before we even get on to issues around Iran, Myanmar, North Korea, the standoff with India, the Chinese encroachment on the new islands in the South Chinese Seas. There's so much that needs to be addressed and so much that the Chinese need to give way on in order to become, shall we say, in order to equalize with the rest of the world. Yeah. So, look, I don't think it's going to stop growth. I mean, the Chinese said they're setting a new lower GDP growth target, but what they're really doing is saying, well, the growth is going to be the number's going to be more realistic. If you look at what Capital Economics say on a fairly regular basis, Chinese growth hasn't been running at 6%. It's been running at about 3.5%. It just depends on how you add up the numbers and how you formulate those statistics. So I don't think China is intending on slowing down at all. I think it's going to carry on growing, and it is firmly set on trying to become the biggest and the best economy in the world.
Yeah, yeah.
That's fair enough, but it's not fair when they start to take over the South China Seas and tell everyone else what to do. Mm-hmm. Now, okay, the Americans aren't complete angels either, but I think we trust the devil we know rather than the Chinese people that we don't so well know.
Yeah, yeah. No, do you know what? It's the way of doing it. The silence, and basically, I mean, there was a part in there about this documentary. You should watch about Australia, but corruption there, and they pushed back on them. And one of the guys said this highlighted how they're acting, not just with us, with all countries. And it's quite worrying, the sort of bribing and sort of pay their way into these systems, you know. And one of these guys said, the trouble is, you know, if you and even our ex foreign minister Jeremy Hunt, I think it was, and he said, the trouble is, if you don't, we talk to them about Hong Kong, we talk to them about these correction camps, and they make it clear to you, essentially, if you know questions on this, then we'll cut you off, or we will not give you access to the higher ministers who can do trade deals with you. And so you've got to say, well, it's either you stop creating jobs, you know, for your own country, or you question them on their human rights, or you just get on with it and take their money. What do you do? And it's got to come to a stage where, you know, you've got to stand up for it. And people are scared to, because, of course, now these contracts are worth millions and billions. So what do you do? You know, do you cut off, do you stop that, you know, money flow into your own country and stand on principle, or just go with it?
Diplomacy suggests that that everyone's going to try and work with it, but persuade the Chinese to be better global citizens. And I think Joe Biden is a good man for this, because he is a consummate diplomat, and I'm sure he's got a strong team around him with Kamala Harris and co. Look, nobody wants the world to collapse. It's a sensitive time economically, and I think it's important to work with these guys and persuade them as well that we can. But I'm quite sure the US is still going to be tough when it comes to withdrawing tariffs. So we, in many respects, whilst the rhetoric that came out of Trump was horrible, what he did was set up the Chinese, or set up the Americans, so that there are tariffs that they can now look at withdrawing if the Chinese agree and actually stop doing some of the bad things that they're doing. And I think, you know, the theft of technology, ignoring copyrights, and also, you know, issues like that are really important. Yeah. But at the same time, we want to carry on working with these guys, because it's important from an economic perspective.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and the problem is they are getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So it's worrying. You know, when you say it, there will be a time, you know, when they'll be so big that you won't have a say with them. You know, they'll just say, we either deal with us, or, I mean, it's like that now, either deal with us as it is, or we don't deal with you. Anyway, okay, let's get on to some individual companies. We had some requests last week, John, and somebody said they forgot to request Orosur Mining, OMI. We'll look at that, but you've also got some others. Let's go alphabetical. Go on.
Before we go on to the company, go on. I think it's worth saying that the we do feel we're in the spring of a super cycle. We feel that, you know, the sort of global economy is still taking off again. The wheels took off from the runway not long ago. We hit, you know, with copper prices well over $9,000 a ton. We bounced back onto the runway, but we've now taken off again. And so we see the major miners doing very well today. Copper prices back over $9,000 a ton. Nickel prices up as well. So the electric vehicle market is good. And we do feel that the recovery is intact. Sure, there is going to be a little bit of negative news flow on the Chinese pulling back on some of their stimulus, and even the Federal Reserve pulling back on some of the emergency liquidity that they were pumping into markets. But I still think the general direction is very positive from a stimulus perspective. We've just come off a conference call with Kodal Minerals. We were discussing their Bagumi lithium project there, and they tell us that lithium prices or spot cargoes are trading for spot cargoes trading for over $700 a ton in some cases. So that's not that; those are spot prices, and we know the Chinese like to buy stuff on spot. It's the way they prefer to work rather than long term contracts. But it looks like that market is strong with new demand coming through. And really from new battery manufacturers that are starting up and expanding the existing factories. So that's very important. And I think they tell us they are having ongoing discussions with a whole range of different groups. And in fact, some new groups seem to be expressing an interest as well. So it sounds like that project, that lithium project in Mali, is beginning to take, shall we say, a stronger form, and looks like it's got better prospects for development going forward. So quite encouraged by that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A lot of stuff. That's COD. You talk about Blue Rock. What's happening there? Blue Rock Diamonds.
Yeah, Blue Rock had a conference call on Monday. Again, really, really interesting. They very heavy rains in December and January. In fact, they had a few days where everything stopped, all the mining, all the road transport in the region stopped in the northern Cape of South Africa, just because the rains flooded everything. It's put back their plans for the redevelopment of the Karivi diamond mine. Very good diamond prices being received in January and February, so the market has recovered. The jewelers are back into the market buying diamonds, and the cutters and polishers are buying the rough diamonds. So good recovery in the market there for local prices. So that's nice to see. And the management team, they've got the new cone crusher installed, and they're commissioning that. And the rest of the new processing plant is going to be commissioned by the end of May. So they're still producing off the old plant. That's good. They do expect production to rise significantly through the second half, which is what we're really waiting to see. And I think we're going to see great value coming out of this company going forward. So I'm personally very very bullish on what they're doing. And I think Mike Houston's doing a great job.
Marvellous. Okay, John, so that's that. What about Orosur, OMI?
Orosur, yes. Look, news out in February, at the end of February, on very high gold intersections out of their Anza gold project in Colombia, and this is being funded by their joint venture partner. And it looks really good, actually. And there's also some polymetallic mineralization. So they sold 6 grams a ton of gold over 22 meters. And then 5 grams over 12 meters. That's nice. And then on the polymetallic side of things, they saw 6.5% of zinc over 20 meters. They're pretty good intersections. So from an exploration perspective, that's looking quite exciting. So, yes, definitely worth keeping an eye on Orosur.
Marvellous stuff. Anything else, John, worth talking about?
Look, I think that's it for now. The market's... Well, the market is looking encouraging. It's interesting. There's a pullback in Blue Jay today. Not sure what that's about. I think that's a very, that their ilmenite titanium mineral sands project in Greenland, I think is strong. I'm confident that they're going to get the money in to finance that. They had the US Exim Bank offering them $208 million by way of a letter of interest, an LOI. There's a certain amount of work that one has to do to firm up a letter of interest like that. But I was talking to a guy at the IFC, the International Finance Corporation, which is the financing arm of the World Bank, last week. And, you know, so much is done, you know, just in preparation. In order to do that letter of intent by the Exim Bank, I suspect that they've made that an in-principle decision that they want to finance the project and the mining company. And the rest of the work really is just done to ensure that everything is right to make sure that the financing goes through successfully. So 90% of the work is done in advance, and then the rest of it all comes along behind. And what I always find very interesting for the Blue Jay project is it is in direct line of sight of the American airbase in Greenland. So, okay, it's about 50 kilometers away, but you can actually see that. And the last thing the Americans would want would be a Chinese company coming in and financing and developing that project. So it's no surprise to me, particularly following Donald Trump saying that he wanted to buy Greenland, that the Americans are coming in to finance this. And they've already offered to finance Ironbark at a 1.46% interest rate. They have a project slightly further to the north in Greenland. So for me, it just makes perfect sense. The Americans are going to want to be very significant in the development of this project. And why not? This is a cheaper way of, shall we say, buying influence in Greenland.
Mm-hmm. Well, sir. Excellent. You've been to Greenland, John, haven't you?
I spent nearly 2 weeks up there with Blue Jay, and I have to say it's the most fantastic place in the world I've ever had to visit. It's spectacular in its scenery. The air is unbelievably fresh and clear. It's stunningly beautiful, and it's just amazingly interesting to visit.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. Cool, John, thanks for that, and we'll speak to you next weeky.
Thank you, Justin.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at 5, Ektek, up 20% to 1.95. At 4, Clontarf, up 16, that's Clontarf Energy, at 16.44 to 0.425. At 3, 7 Digital, that's 43% to 1.825. At 2, Premier African Minerals, Prem, 18% up. At 1, Mountfield Group, that's MOGP, down 1.43%. Okay, times the top five. Most read RNSs at 5, Open Orphan, Journal for Clinical Studies article publication. At 4, Gfinity, appointed by Iconic. And amazing deal there. But big sellers taking advantage of liquidity, piled in, sold off, and it's taking the share price down about 5, 6%. Slightly annoying if you're a holder, but it'll wash out. At 3, Ariel Resources, Sinala Air Core drilling results. At 2, Ektek collaboration framework agreement with Toyota. A big name there. And at 1, Greatland Gold, further outstanding drilling results from Javier Orm. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciado.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.